When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. When it's time to get a new set of windows, a new door, you got to go with Pella. Why? Well, first of all, they can provide window and door solutions to literally any home, and because the people are great. Steve, Clint, Brian, Vince, the whole gang, everybody's fantastic. And you know what else is fantastic? The peace of mind of knowing you're going to be working with Pella the entire time. Did you know? Do you realize that when you work with some other window companies, all of a sudden questions pop up like, who's installing it? Well, no, you got to call that guy. You're going to have to call him, and then you call him. Who's going to pre-finish it? Well, that's someone totally different. You got to call them. Before you know it, you're working with like five different people. Ugh. It's a massive headache. You want the convenience and simplicity of working with one company, not three or four. That's Pella. Check them out on the web, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. All right, on the podcast today, Bill Self. And really, really good conversation with him. And, you know, as you grow up and mature and become an adult, and by an adult, I mean, you know, get married, have kids, start a career, that kind of stuff. But as you grow and mature and become an adult, you reflect on your life, and from time to time, you realize that, you know, there are a handful of people that have come into your life and have, you know, altered it in a good way, that are major influences, real game changers for you, really impactful. And Bill Self is absolutely one of those guys for me. And before I play my podcast chat with him, I kind of wanted to give a few thoughts on Coach Self and a little bit on my relationship with him. But I think first I want to give a little background info on me and my journey to Kansas and my time there and meeting Coach Self and all that. So as most of you know, I played for KU for 2 years, 2003 to 2005. You know, Kansas was my dream school growing up. Kirk Heinrich's my all-time favorite college basketball player. I read the book Floor Burns by Jared Haas. Loved it. I loved Kansas basketball. And, you know, I can remember fairly early on in my junior year of high school, and keep in mind, this is like 2001, the days before Huddle and every game being online and all that digital stuff. During that time, you had to send VHS tapes out for people to see your games if they hadn't discovered you yet on the AAU scene. And so I remember sitting down with my high school coach, Jeff Smith, and we made a list of about 10, 12, 15 schools or so. And we put three of my best games on the tapes, sent them out. And, you know, of course, the first school on my list was Kansas. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect in terms of an answer from some of these schools. Listen, I thought I was a good player. I thought I was good enough to play anywhere. But you never know. You never know. So I can vividly remember my high school coach coming into practice. It was a Saturday morning practice. And he making a beeline for me. I mean, he comes in and comes right at me. This is about 2 weeks after we sent the tapes out. Beeline right at me. He says, Nick, I just got off the phone with Kansas. They love you. I almost fell over. So that's how the recruitment began. I was recruited by Roy Williams and Joe Holiday, one of their assistant coaches. He was kind of the lead assistant recruiting me. And, you know, Roy Williams came to a practice at Lincoln Southeast High School, came to some AAU games. Joe Holiday came to a bunch of my games, AAU and high school. I went on a few unofficial visits there, played pickup, went to a game, you know, and I was sold the first time I saw a game in Outfield House. And I went to the Kansas-UCLA game in December of my junior year. So this would have been like 2002 probably. And I remember kind of looking at my dad. We're sitting right behind the bench. We're in Allen Fieldhouse. And I remember looking over at my dad during the jump ball. We kind of looked at each other like, oh my God. This, I could maybe play here? Like, oh my God, this is incredible. And so what's interesting is, you know, no school recruited me harder than Kansas, but they ended up not offering me a scholarship. That's kind of weird, right? Now, they were always honest and upfront from the get-go. I remember Roy Williams, one of the first things he told me was, Nick, you don't need to be a five-star McDonald's All-American to play for me. It's one of the first things he told me. And at the end of my summer AAU season of after my junior year, so heading into my senior year, I remember having a conversation with Coach Williams and Joe Holiday, and they said, listen, we have you as our sixth on our list of guards that we are recruiting. You are sixth. And we are going to take three guards in this class. You're sixth. We're taking three guards. The five other guards were J.R. Giddens, Jeremy Case, Shannon Brown, Marcus Dove, and Omar Wilkes. And then it was me. Now, J.R. Giddens and Jeremy Case, they committed pretty early, so they were already in. And I remember, you know, talking to the coaching staff, they told me, okay, listen, depending on what Shannon Brown, Marcus Dove, and Omar Wilkes do, if all those guys say no, the scholarship is yours. I said, cool. And so I waited, and I waited, and Shannon Brown goes to Michigan State. I'm like, okay. And Marcus Dove goes to Oklahoma State. I'm like, okay. And then Omar Wilkes, son of Jamal Wilkes, who ends up being one of my best friends, he commits to Kansas. So I'm kind of like, oh, Omar. Crap. So now what, right? Well, right after that, Roy Williams and Joe Holiday called and said, listen, we don't have a scholarship for you, but you know we love you. You know we believe in you. We want you to come as a preferred walk-on if you're interested. So I thought about it, and I still went through the recruiting process and went through the season and all that stuff. But I kind of, throughout the whole time, I knew where my heart was. My heart was in Lawrence, Kansas. You can't lie to your heart. You can't lie to yourself. So I can remember in late March of 2003, during the NCAA tournament, I think it was maybe after their Sweet 16 game or whatever, and I remember calling Joe Holiday and Roy Williams and saying, yes, I'm in. I'm committing to being a preferred walk-on. I'm in. They were pumped. I was pumped. Well, about a week or so later, KU is heading to the Final Four, and the rumors are swirling about Roy Williams in North Carolina. And I'm nervous, really nervous. And I'll never forget coming home after school in April of 2003 and seeing on ESPN, Roy Williams is headed to North Carolina. I was devastated. Devastated. I mean, now what? Where was I going to go play college basketball? Like, what am I going to do? Could I go to North Carolina? Roy did offer me to go to North Carolina, but I'm like, I don't know if I want to go to North Carolina. Who's going to be the next head coach of Kansas? Would they even want me? I was devastated. Devastated. And then in late April, a man by the name of Bill Self gets the Kansas job. Now, I obviously knew who Coach Self was. He had a great team at Illinois. Darren Williams, D. Brown, Luther Head, Ball. I mean, great team, right? I knew he was a rising coach. So Coach Self gets the job. But Coach Self, he didn't recruit me. He has never seen me play. So what's going to happen? And a few days after Coach Self gets a job, I get a call. And Coach Self wants to meet with me. So me, my mom, my dad, we drive to Lawrence, Kansas. And the whole time driving on I-29, I'm scared, right? Like, because keep in mind, I'm a walk-on. There's nothing contractually binding me to the university or the basketball program. I mean, Bill Self, if he wanted to, he could be like, Nick Bahi? Nah, I'm not dealing with that. I mean, he could cut ties and I'm dangling in the wind in like May of my senior year, which is a disaster to try to be a college basketball player. And then, so that's going on in my head. And then at the same time, I'm thinking, okay, do I want to play for this guy, right? Like, this guy's never seen me play. I don't know him. Does his style fit me? Do we mesh? Like, what's he like? All that stuff. And so I walked into Bill Self's office, and I was nervous. I didn't know what to think. And there was, we had a 30-minute meeting about 17 years ago to the day. And he blew me away. He blew me away. And anyone that knows Coach Self knows how he is. He is charming. And he has a way of making you feel like $1 million without being phony. There's nothing phony about Bill Self. And I vibed well with him. He said all the right things. He, you know, he told me, I didn't know about you. I still want you to come. And so I was sold. I'm in. So in a span of, you know, 10, 14 days, I went from a year and a half long recruiting process with Roy Williams and committing to him to now in one 30-minute meeting, I'm not going to play for Bill Self. It happened fast. So about a month later in June, I'm moving into the Jayhawk Towers, and I'm a Jayhawk. I'm going to summer school, and I'm playing for Bill Self. And the one thing I always really, really admired about Coach Self was he treated me and coached me just like he did everyone else. He treated me just like he treated Aaron Miles, who is our 2-year starting point guard stud. He treated me just like he treated J.R. Giddens, who I was in the freshman class with J.R., I mean, a 5-star McDonald's All-American. Treated me just the same. He had never seen me play. I was a walk-on, and he coached and treated me the exact same. And I remember my very first individual workout in June. It was in the practice facility. And Coach Self came in, and we were working on some footwork shooting stuff. And Coach Self comes to my group, and he taught me what he calls a cheat step. It's just a different way of kind of planting your feet, getting squared, and shooting. And he worked with me and coached me hard for almost the whole workout. Like, felt like he was specifically focused on me. I'm telling you, that stuff mattered to me right away, given my situation. I didn't know if he was just going to, you know, dismiss me or anything, you know, whatever. Like, not even really like, what's your name again? White walk-on, you, go over there. There was none of that. There was never this, hey, you're just a walk-on, or I didn't even recruit you, so I don't really care about you. None of that. He wrapped his arms around me, he embraced me, and he coached me. And listen, he's a tough coach, man. Like, Bill Self, he'll get after your ass. He coaches you tough. He demands a lot out of you. The number one prevailing thing that is non-negotiable to play for Bill Self is you got to be tough. And when that's the case, he's going to demand a lot from you. So it was every day challenging you. But I got to tell you, man, playing for him is incredible. And, I mean, obviously, you don't have the kind of success he's had by accident. You don't win, 14 straight Big 12 titles, go to 3 Final Fours, and win a national title by accident. You aren't in the Basketball Hall of Fame by accident. Coach Self is special. And, you know, there were so many film sessions and locker room talks and practices and games where I knew in the moment, I'm like, Dan, this guy is special. Dan, this guy's good. Dan, that's a good point. Dan, look at that drill. Oh, I've never thought of it like that. Oh, now I see what he's, now I get it. There's so many of those moments. And I would say that, you know, me and Coach Self had a great relationship when I played for him, to the point where I slowly earned his trust. Like, and he started to believe in me as a player, and to the point where he wasn't scared to throw me out there a little bit. For about a 4 or 5 game stretch in Big 12 play my freshman year, I was our backup point guard. I was Aaron Miles' backup point guard. Now, keep in mind, Aaron Miles basically never left the floor. You know, I was that guy that anybody that watched the basketball game, when it's getting close to that under 12 media timeout, you know, there's like 12:09 on the clock, like, hey, get Aaron a blow. I come in, right? But, I mean, we're in Big 12 play. We're playing Texas on Big Monday, Iowa State, Baylor. Like, I'm in there. But ultimately, when the season got deep into February and March, and he shortened that rotation, and I went back to the bench. And he used to do some cool stuff, man. He used to, when I was at the end of the bench, and I don't know if he, during games, he would kind of, you know, when coaches are patrolling the sidelines, he would kind of walk down to, it was me and Christian Moody and Steven Vincent, and he would like kneel down to me or to whoever and say, hey, what are you seeing? What do you think? What are you seeing out there? Like, he in a game, go down to me and say, Nick, what are you seeing? Thinking about going zone, what do you think? I mean, just little stuff like that. I'll never forget one of my favorite stories was Iowa State, my freshman year in Allen Fieldhouse. Game goes into overtime, and the place is rocking. And they were good. I mean, they had Curtis Stinson and Will Blaylock and Jake Sullivan and Holman and Vroman. They were good. And we are in a battle. And it was one of those games that I played because that's when I was playing a little bit. I got in that game, and I got in the second half late, and you know, Coach Self subs me in, and it's a free throw, and I'm in the game. Outfield us, it's an afternoon game. The sun's shining through. It's incredible, and I'm nervous. So during a free throw, right as I go, I mean, I would go over to Coach Self, and I'm motor mouthed asking a million questions. Hey, are we trapping the post? Which guy are we helping off of? Next time offensively, do you want two back in the way? And I'm just, you know, asking a million questions. And he just looked at me. And anybody know, he gave that little Bill Self smile. And he kind of tapped me on the shoulder. He said, Hey, bud, go have fun. Just have fun. I mean, it's rocking in there. Big moment, Iowa State, Kansas, second half. Hey, bud, go have fun. And you know what? I was able to, like, just him saying that, I was like, whew. Like, I just said, above everything else, I needed to relax. And he knew that. I just loved that little interaction with him. But heading in, so that was my freshman. Heading into my sophomore year, I played the best basketball of my life. I always tell people that. Like, the best basketball I ever played in my life was going into my sophomore year at Kansas. I had 31 in a scrimmage with refs. I mean, I was hooping. And he had talked about redshirting me. But in a meeting in his office right before the season started, he told me, we had like a sit down, heart to heart. He's like, listen, Nick, I think you're going to, you know, I see you as the fifth or sixth guard. I think you could play anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes per game, but it's your call if you want a red shirt. It's up to you. I told him, no way. I mean, we were preseason number one. You know, Langford, Simeon, Aaron Miles, Mike Lee, those guys were all seniors. And I mean, he's telling me there's a chance I'm going to play 5 to 15 minutes a game. Ain't no way I'm redshirting. So the season starts, and, you know, I'm not getting a ton of minutes early, which was a little discouraging. And then in December, Wayne Simeon gets hurt. He injures his thumb, which sidelined him about 5 to 6 weeks, which was a big blow for me because it caused Coach Self to have to change our offense a little bit, tweak it, because we were built to pound it into Wayne. You know, high-low, we were just throw the ball into Wayne, get him touches, which suited me well because I was a good post-entry passer and, you know, I was a good three-point shooter. So if he came to double Wayne, I could shoot. But with Wayne out, we were now going to go to an offense that's more spread the floor, ball screens, you know, guards got to drive and create. Well, that's not my game. That's not my game. Russell Robinson and Jeff Hawkins are way better than me at that. So those guys completely moved ahead of me, and I'm the odd man out back at the end of the bench. So the season goes along, and I don't play. I mean, I played more as a freshman, to be honest. And, you know, at the end of the season, I could feel that internal struggle in my mind and my heart. that desire to play, that desire to maybe transfer. And I kind of hated that I was feeling like that. But you can't fight what's inside of you. You can't fight what's in your heart in the moment. And you can't lie to yourself. And I remember sitting in my room at the Jayhawk Towers and asking myself, if my career ends and I never played consistently, wasn't a starter, wasn't a consistent rotation guy, if my career ends and I never played, will I be happy? Can I live with that? And the answer was no. And also, keep in mind, also at that time, I could also see we're bringing in Mario Chalmers. I knew we were maybe going to get in on Brandon Rush late. I saw the potential in Russell Robinson, who I think the world of. And I just knew I'm not as good as those guys. I knew. I was like, those guys are better than me. Mario Chalmers is better than me. So you add all that up, and I made the decision to transfer. And I hated it. I never wanted to leave. I hated it. And that's just it. Most people, when they transfer, you would think, oh, you hated it there. Oh, you didn't like the coach. No. I love Kansas. I love KU. I love going to school there. I love Bill Self. I love playing for him. Leaving KU was one of the hardest decisions I have ever made. And what was maybe the hardest thing was going into his office and looking Coach Self in the eye and telling him that I wanted to transfer. It was awful. I hated it. And Coach Self didn't want me to leave. He tried to get me to stay. But when I finally told him, I was 100% sure that I wanted to leave, he supported me. He helped me out. He talked to Dana Altman, and so I ultimately left Kansas and transferred to Creighton. And for the vast majority of coaches, you would think that's where the relationship ends, right? I mean, hell, I transferred away from him. I left him. Most coaches would say, all right, good riddance. See you next. Bye. Nope. Not with a guy like Coach Self. He stayed in touch with me. And he always made me feel like I'm a part of the Kansas basketball program. Always. Hey guys, quick break to talk to you guys about Pella Windows and Doors. And I want to make sure that you guys understand that Pella Windows of Omaha and Lincoln, they are following CDC guidelines during this coronavirus situation. They can safely serve any of your window and door needs in the showroom or in your home. All the employees at Pella and the customers are completing a COVID-19 questionnaire as provided by the CDC prior to entering the showroom, entering the office, and any potential customer's home. And all the employees are required to self-quarantine for a recommended 14 days if that individual comes into contact with someone who's tested positive, if they traveled anywhere outside of the Omaha-Lincoln area. Bottom line, they are taking all the necessary precautions to make sure that they are safe and you are safe so you can safely move forward with your window and door needs. And on top of all that, as a result of all this stuff with the coronavirus, Pella is offering temporary special financing options. They are now available. So, man, now is the time to take advantage of these special rates and put that value back into your home, and you have that peace of mind knowing that all the necessary safety protocol and precautions have been put into place by Pella, so you know the whole time you can feel safe. Give Pella a call, 402-493-1350, or check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. Back to my podcast chat with Bill Self. When KU would come play at Nebraska while I was playing basketball at Creighton, if the schedule worked, I'd go to the games. I'd go to the game. Like I'd drive to Lincoln and I'd go to the game. And Coach Self would make sure that I came down and would come into their road locker room to see him and the other coaches and players after the game. Think about that. I mean, I'm a current Creighton player that transferred away from Kansas at a Kansas-Nebraska game, and he would wave to me in the crowd before the game and would have me come back and see him and the guys after the game. Even in 2008, so this is my senior year at Creighton, Kansas came to Omaha for their first round of the NCAA tournament. Now, I'm playing in the NIT at the time. Like, we're playing Rhode Island on like a Monday or Tuesday, and Kansas plays on like Thursday or something like that. But I get in touch with one of my old, I think Jeremy Case, and who was on that team, and Coach Self wants me to come to the team hotel and see the team. So I came to the team hotel. I came to the team meeting. Coach Self had me get up in front of the team. I did an impression of Coach Self in front of the eventual national champs. That was the eventual national champs. That was Sharon and Mario and Darrell Arthur. That was that crew. And I sat in on their film session. Again, I'm a current Creighton guard who transferred away from Kansas, away from Bill Self. And he still made me feel like I was a part of the program. You know, and since that point, I've had a few opportunities with, you know, whether it's local broadcasts or the Jayhawk Network or ESPN Plus broadcast to call a few Kansas games over the last couple of years. I called two games of theirs 2 years ago. And when I walk into shoot around, Coach Self lights up and makes me feel like $1 million. And when Coach Self got inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, he invited all his former players. And who got an invite? Me. I couldn't believe it. And I know this is kind of weird, but Gary Bedore, longtime beat writer, Kansas beat writer, he's now at the Kansas City Star, he interviewed me in Massachusetts before the ceremony. And I just want to read you my quotes in that story because I kind of put it well. So here, this is some quotes of mine in the Kansas City Star. So about getting an invitation, I said, quote, I almost wanted to get back to him right away and say, are you sure you didn't want to send this to someone else? I go on to say, there are guys here who play for Coach Self at Kansas, Oral Roberts, Illinois, Tulsa, and Oklahoma State. I've got to be the only guy here that transferred away from Bill Self. It goes to show you what kind of a guy he is. He invited me here, and I transferred. He could have shut the door on me twice when Roy Williams left. He didn't have to continue to open the door for me, but he did. He always made me feel part of Kansas basketball. To be here is amazing. And I went on to say that I want to reflect on Bill Self, the person, more so than the coach. Everyone knows about his accomplishments, the Big 12 title streak, the Final Fours, the national championship. For me, it's Bill Self and what a great person he is. I really do feel honored to be here. That was from the heart. And lastly, to illustrate how good of a guy Bill Self is. Do this without getting emotional, man. So in 2016, I had some major health issues. Major health issues. I had two strokes in my cerebellum, and I had a tumor in my thymus gland, which is kind of right at the top of your sternum. Had a tumor in my thymus gland that I needed surgery on to remove that we weren't sure if it was cancer or not. And I made the announcement that I was having health problems on my radio show at the time in Omaha in 1620, that I was going to be leaving the show for a little bit, that I was in my health problems, then I was having surgery. The very first phone call I got, the very first one, was from Bill Self. And that voicemail meant so much to me that I've saved that voicemail. And I debated doing this. I called my parents and asked them, should I do this or not? Like, I debated doing this, but here it is. I've saved it, and the only reason I'm playing this is just for you guys to understand how good of a guy this dude is. Here is the first voicemail that Bill Self left me. This was before my surgery, right when he got the news about some of my health issues. Here is that voicemail.
Hey, Nick. Hey, played Oklahoma State last night. After the game, we got Aaron Miles. We got Omar Wilkes in the office. And, of course, telling stories about how you were the second best dancer on that team behind, distant second behind Omar and everything. And I get a text today from Reed Forgrave saying that you're going through some health issues, bud. And, I don't know what they are. I think you're having exploratory stuff done based on the test. And hey, I just want to let you know I'm thinking about you. I only coached you for a year. Nobody I respect more. I think you're just a total stud. And just want to tell you, I'm thinking about you and praying for you and just, hang in there, stay positive. I know you will. That's the only way you know how to be. So I look forward, don't worry about getting back with me, but I'll look forward to hearing how it goes and certainly hoping for the best. Okay, buds? All right, man. And Coach Roberts is here as well, and so is Coach Townsend. We all send the same message. Okay, sir. Talk to you later.
And then, right after my surgery, he called me and left me another voicemail. This was like two or three days after my surgery. Bill Self called me and left me another voicemail. I have saved that voicemail, obviously. Here is Bill Self's voicemail to me 3 days after my surgery.
Nick, Coach Self calling. It's about 9:15 on Friday morning. Don't expect a call back or anything. I just calling to check on you, see how you're doing, how you're feeling. I know this has been a very tough week, traumatic, but also probably just sore and everything else that goes along with surgery. So thinking of you, bud. Hope you're doing as well as you can be. Praying for good news, and if you feel up to it, I'm always here to visit. Okay, man. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's really emotional for me to listen to again. Because when you're going through something serious in life, you know, I'm sitting there. I mean, I didn't know if I had cancer. I didn't know. I mean, my daughter had just been born, not even a month prior to that. You find out a lot about yourself and about, you know, your circle of people, and phone calls and voicemails like that mean the world. They mean the world, to the point where here I am 4 years later, I still have those voicemails. I've saved them. And those voicemails mean a ton, especially from someone I love and respect as much as Coach Self. That's just who he is. Again, I only played for the guy for 2 years. I transferred away from him, and this guy still cares about me as a person. And so I was so lucky to play for him. I can't tell you how proud I am to call him a friend. And someone that I admire and look up to big time. So there you go. I could tell you a bunch more stories and good stuff about Coach Self, but enough of me, right? Let's get to him. Enough of me. Let's get to the man himself. Let's get to him, huh? Here is my podcast chat with the Hall of Famer, Kansas head coach, Bill Self. Well, he's Bill Self. He needs no introduction. And he is social distancing and quarantining in Lawrence, Kansas right now. I guess, Coach, we'll start with this. You coached me, so you knew my game. You were around me every day for 2 years, so you got to know me as a person. Level of surprise that my career has been talking about basketball as opposed to actually playing basketball.
No, there's absolutely no surprise. Whoever predicted that in sixth grade, I think, was right. Right on the money on that. But I will say this, Nick, and I say this with all sincerity. very few players could impact a program the way that you did positively for us when you didn't get a chance to really play. Because we obviously had some guys.
Yes.
But if you'd have stuck around, you would have played. But you obviously made a good choice and to go to play for Dana and the Blue Jays. But you were really you got something about you that certainly was a huge addition to us. And so naturally, even though I was happy for you, none of us wanted to see you leave.
I hated it too, Coach. And that's why I always hesitate to paint all transfers with a broad brush, because every situation is different. Now, some people transfer for terrible reasons. I loved you. I loved Kansas. I didn't want to leave. But I remember when Mario Chalmers came on his visit, I said, that guy's pretty good. And, you know, we had a year of Russell Robinson, and I was like, that cat's pretty good. I knew we were recruiting Brandon Rush. I was like, that guy's really good. It hit a point, man, where I remember sitting in the Jayhawk Towers and I felt like, you know, if my career were to end and I never really got a chance to play, would I be happy? And I just couldn't lie to myself, you know, and it was hard though.
Well, the majority of the players out there, or let's just say college athletes in general, were in your boat and not the other. They were in your boat saying, well, you know, I'm going to be a 4-year guy. I got to get my degree. I want to be a part of something that's bigger than myself. But I also just want to, you know, with all the work, time and work and effort that goes into it, I just want to be able to play. Yeah. I just want to be able to contribute. And so you're exactly right on the transfer stuff. So many kids in today's time transfer because, the coach got onto them or he pitched them or somebody else is being recruited, this, and this. Maybe they feel like they should be promised something. When the reality is probably the majority do it because it's just a better situation for them. When everything's been well thought out and that's what you did. One of your best buddies, as you know, is a guy that's on staff with me, Jeremy Case.
Yep.
Jeremy Case was just good enough to be our fifth guard.
Right.
Every year. And
right.
The fifth guard plays limited minutes. So if you're going to play, you're going to play four perimeter players a lot. And the fifth one may get a little bit of burn and he was that, but in Jeremy's case, you know, it's turned out good because he's part of a national champion. That's going to be part of his legacy. It got him into coaching. He's here with us. And so, but certainly I see it both ways when you talk about transfers.
Yeah. I mean, because I remember, you know, before I left, you and I were talking about redshirting me. I was maybe going to redshirt as a sophomore or later on down the road. So it was always interesting to me. I remember watching the Memphis game and I thought, man, if I'd have redshirted,
I'd have been on that team.
And while I was cheering my heart out for you guys, I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy that I could have, that could have been me. But you know, it's funny how things work out. I mean, obviously, I got an opportunity to be a team captain and start every game as a senior at Creighton. So, I mean, I think it sounds like in talking about this, like, where do you land on the immediate eligibility for the first time transfers? Because the devil's in the details with that. And while we're sitting here saying, yeah, a lot of the guys transfer for the right reasons, this also opens up.
It's a terrible rule, even if they transfer for the right reasons.
Yes.
It's a terrible rule. It's the change where kids can be eligible immediately. You know, I know I'm in the vast majority on this as all coaches, it's setting up, Wild Wild West free agency.
Yeah.
Why do you need to go out and recruit a high school kid when you can just wait and recruit a college kid with some experience? Yeah. I could be wrong about this because I don't know details, but you know, how fantastic has your ex program done there in Omaha?
Yes.
I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And you do that. And then you have kids that are still transferring. And believing that they could be eligible immediately, the grad transfer rule I thought was a bad rule. where they could be eligible immediately. Now there's talk that a kid could transfer and be eligible immediately as an undergrad, and if they graduate, they can transfer and be eligible immediately too. So you know, theoretically, a guy could play for three different schools.
Yeah,
and never sit out. But I think it's a bad rule. I think it's going to create more animosity amongst our sports. I'm not sure the statistics say it hurts graduation rate. I'm not sure transferring hurts as much as what some people think it does, but I do believe this. If you it's not a penalty. If you choose to go to another school, you just sit out a year. It should be that way with everybody. And people can say, well, there are exceptions, and yes, there are, but you can't have exceptions for everybody. Where do you draw the line?
I know it's,
you know, everybody keeps stretching it, and the box keeps expanding. And if you have somebody maybe not be 100% honest with the document, that kid can play, where other kids that are totally honest with their documents, maybe they don't get a chance to. It puts you in a situation where maybe integrity could be a little compromised.
No doubt.
And things like that. So, you know, now the whole deal is, okay, well, let's just make them eligible immediately. Right. And now you're going to look at, there's going to be 2,500 to 3,000 kids transferring every year.
Right.
Just in our sport. And where do you draw the line? Okay, what's the drop dead date when you can transfer? Can you transfer the first day before classes? Can you just leave universities and programs, leave them high and dry because somebody else on another team transferred and a scholarship became open? So we're just going to go steal this guy so he can transfer and fill that void. It's going to be different. It's not going to be positive. I think there's cases where it could be positive. Don't
sure.
get me wrong.
Yeah.
But as a whole, as our sport, I don't think it's good. They go from the NCAA goes from, well, do we even need to really make freshmen eligible? You know, yeah. It wasn't long ago.
No,
I mean,
relatively speaking,
we were talking about freshman ineligibility and setting out a year would be good for you.
Right.
And now it's like, are you kidding me? Right. Now you can just leave and never set out. I mean, well, it contradicts itself so much in what we think is important. What about APR?
Yeah.
What about APR where, so if a kid is eligible, but he's not, but he doesn't have a 2.6 or whatever. So if he transferred, they got to adjust that because now there could be schools not competing in the NCAA tournament because of this rule. There's a lot of things can go that certainly, and everybody says, well, coaches can be free to go and that kind of stuff. Yeah, coaches can be free to go. You think there's a lot of coaches moving within our profession each year? You know, one of our buddies,
yeah.
you know, just got let go at Wake Forest yesterday. You
yep.
think that was his choice?
Right.
There's always going to be exceptions to every rule that doesn't make it a cookie cutter deal where it said, well, if he can do this, we should be able to do that. I totally agree. But as a whole, over time, I just can't see the positives on this.
Yeah, I just think, you know, with the future of our sport, like, we got to think about continuity, and then we got to think about being more inclusive rather than exclusive. And whatever that all looks like, whether that, you know, in the early stages, we put up a, you know, Jay Billis is, you know, he has a lot of interesting thoughts on this. You know, we just put up roadblocks and barriers for a lot of kids, and that's a challenge. But I'm totally with you. I get the spirit of what they're saying, but I think the actual practical application of making transfers immediately eligible is going to create a ridiculous amount of issues in the sport.
Well, it's going to be a situation. I mean, first of all, and you've been around me, not saying that I'm any good at all. And you've been around Dana, who's obviously terrific. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't coach guys if you feel like that you can't piss them off.
Yes. Right.
I mean, what is the world coming to? Okay. I can't get on you because I can't get on you in the summer because you're being a irresponsible and you're not working and you won't, you missed three classes in a row and I bust your butt. And now all of a sudden I can't do that because you just take your ball and go home.
Yeah.
To me, you want to be in a situation, an environment where you're able to actually coach your guys.
Yes.
And there's a big difference between, I'm not saying ride them all the time. That's not coaching, but also telling them how great they are all the time isn't coaching either. you got to find that fine line where you are able to motivate, get the most out of them, and sometimes operating with a sense of urgency because of the consequences that could occur if you don't is positive.
Yeah.
Sometimes it may not be it. And now coaches be, oh, I can't piss him off. Jeez, he's got options. You know, that school back home that you know, I know they're holding a scholarship for him. There's people, you know, his AAU coach has told me this or whatever, and it's like going, you know, it's just not going to be fair. So think about this. A football guy, you're getting ready to start two-a-days. If they pass this rule and it goes into effect now, does that mean that if it goes into effect now, that means that kids that transfer now would be eligible immediately? What about, we don't even know with the COVID-19. We don't know when school will start. We don't know when our season will start. Let's just say in August, you know, five players off a particular team just say, you know what? I'm deciding to transfer, and the impact that could have on a university is obviously great. Whereas I believe it's okay to transfer. It's mm-hmm. okay, but just set out a year. Right. I mean, I don't see the big deal about that at all.
Yeah. I'm 100% with you. You bring up like coaching kids and all that now, cause there's always been this narrative that's been around for forever of, you know, kids these days have changed. Kids are soft. Do you find that to be true? Like, have you had to evolve how you coach because the kids have changed? Because I remember being at your shoot around doing your exhibition game last year, and it was like a blast from the past. It felt the same. How you were talking to the guys felt the same. Like, do you feel like you've had to evolve?
No, yes. But I also believe that you can evolve and not compromise your principles too.
Sure.
You know, I'm a big believer and you know this and most coaches are, but there's, you know, it's okay to screw up, you know, but to screw up because of effort, to screw up because of concentration, to screw up because of attention to detail, you know, those are things that you can't do. And so certainly with me, I think that, I believe this. If you were to ask me, whenever you left, did I let you settle, or did I let any player settle? And that guy would say, or the player told me, Coach, why'd you let me settle? That would be the biggest punch in the gut a player could ever tell a coach. Mm. Our job is to make you even believe that you're better than what you even think they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're 6'2", you feel like you're 6'4" when you leave. If you can bench press 200, you walk out of there thinking you're the strongest man in the room.
Right.
I mean, that's what we do. But to get there, you got to go through some ups and downs and things like that. And so I think that you can approach it differently. You can get on guys differently. You can certainly, some guys can be embarrassed in a group. Some guys can't. Some guys you need one-on-one stuff. Some guys need other things. We all understand that. But still, it doesn't compromise this. Hey, this is how we do things. This is our culture. And anything less than this is unacceptable. I still think kids are good. I still think kids want to be good. I still think they want to work. I still think that. I think the people surrounding the kids, i.e. parents,
yeah,
including myself and my wife, I think we created an environment where we want it to be as easy for them as possible. So that automatically puts in their mind that this isn't really how it's done in the real world. This isn't how we do it. Whereas, no, this is how you succeed. This is how you make it. And we just don't know that yet.
Have you found over your career, from Oral Roberts to Tulsa to Illinois to Kansas, is it harder to build a program up or maintain it, maintain the level of success? Because, boy, have you created a monster Lawrence.
Well, I first of all, I didn't create it here. I think Naismith and Fog Allen and them created it here. So it's existed here forever. But I say it's harder to maintain, and it's much more fun to build.
Okay.
To be real honest with you, you know, hey, they're, you know, we lost 18 in a row at Oral Roberts. And to see, you know, going from 18 losses in a row to winning 31 of our last 38, we beat teams coming off, two teams coming off Final Fours and things like that there at the end. No, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun. Here, and it's going to get this way at Creighton too.
Yeah.
Here, it's almost like a relief. Oh, we got to win this. We're supposed to win.
Sure.
You know, so you go into it in a home locker room, and you know this, doesn't feel anything like a road locker room.
No.
A win at home is like, okay, all right, good job, guys. Okay, what time are we practicing tomorrow? All right, good job. Hey, hang in there now. Go get some rest. All right. And unless it's a special win. And on the road, you beat a team that you're equal on the road. It's like everybody's dancing in the locker room and that kind of stuff. So, to your point, I really think building is a more fun way to go, but it takes so much damn energy.
Oh, man.
To build. It really does. It takes a lot of energy.
Lots of people that are in my kind of like podcast listening audience are obviously Nebraska fans, and they got some new head coaches with Scott Frost and Fred Hoiberg. And I know you've battled with Coach Hoiberg a lot at Iowa State. Like, I want you to expand on building it up. Like, what do you believe are the keys to taking over a program and building it up?
Well, first of all, you know, you can't have two better hires.
Yeah.
Period. I mean, from experience, you know, been there, done it. I mean, at both of them, I don't know Scott well, but I've met him and talked to him, and I'm such a fan from afar, even though people probably thought it would be easier than what it is. Football's mm-hmm. different. I mean, a football, one recruiting class may get you in a position where you can be really good by their junior year. Where basketball is different, you know, it can happen faster, but I think that the thing that you got to do, and this is easier said than done, you have to be patient. There's no quick fixes. You're building a foundation, even if the success on the court or field maybe doesn't look like it initially, because without the foundation, you can never really progress anyway. And in basketball, you gotta get one or two guys that you feel like can be a best player on other Big Ten teams.
Yeah.
You got to have players that you can hang your hat on, and Fred will do that. He'll do it either through high school ranks, JUCO, but you know, obviously transfers. You know, nobody's better at it than him when it comes to that route, and that's one reason why they were so good at Iowa State. It's one of those things that you can't get impatient, and certainly the players can't get impatient. And I actually believe, you know, recruiting young kids early on when you're not very good or not projected to be very good is the way to go, because the older kids aren't going to be able to turn it for you.
Yeah.
And the young kids may be able to be a part of the foundation by the time they're juniors and seniors, i.e. Sasha, Darnell, Russell.
Yes.
I mean, let's just call it like it is. Those guys were nice players, but they weren't guys that everybody was beating the door down for.
Right.
But they come and can't really play much as freshmen. And by the time they're juniors or sophomores, they're pretty damn good. And the seniors, everybody talked about our young kids that were our most talented. But those seniors were the foundation and certainly why we won it in 08.
Yeah, you've had some fun. I've loved watching. You've been watching old games and you break them down. It makes me remember the old film sessions, and it's been great. I mean, watching that Memphis game, I was blown away at the physicality of the game, but also just how good. I thought your big guys against Memphis, in particular Shady, Darrell Arthur, was
Shady
incredible.
He's the best player in the game.
Yes.
He had 20-10. He's the best player in the game, and that was a perfect team at our level, and I'm sure Creighton's going through this too. Hey, let your foundation be the older guys, but you know, hopefully your best players are probably and your most talented guys are probably your young kids, and that's kind of what that was with Sharon and Shady, our two most talented guys, but still, we had all those rocks around them.
Right. How has it been being quarantined for someone like you that's used to coaching and traveling and recruiting? Because I'm sure there are times where you're getting on a flight or you're just dead tired driving to the office and you're like, man, you know what I'd love? I'd love 2 days to just sit on my couch and relax. Well, that sounds good, but after you do it for a couple of days, you kind of go crazy. Like, have you enjoyed this break, or do you kind of miss all that more than ever?
No, I miss it. I miss going into the office. I don't miss recruiting much at all, or I don't miss getting on planes or anything like that. But I miss going to the office. I miss missing my staff. I miss my administrative help. Certainly, Miss Joni, Mm-hmm. You know, I've only seen Joni twice since the quarantine, and as you know, she's family and
yep.
has been for a while. And Tammy, you know, Tammy's still. I mean, I don't see any of them, and talk to them, but don't see them. And but the thing I miss most are the players. I mean, it's unbelievable that I did a Zoom call the other day with every player and their families just to give them an update on, hey, where we are. Hey, when can you come back? When's, you know, do you get a check? When can you come back? Right. What about parking fees? Hey, how do we enroll for summer and fall semester? Is it all going to be online? You know, what do you have, you know, what do you have to work out with? Are you getting your stuff? I mean, just, you know, just general things, you know, what mm-hmm. can we send you nutritionally? What can we send you equipment wise? What can we see, you know, just trying to get them educated on how everything works. And amazingly, you know, you hang up saying, God, I miss those guys. Yeah. And I really do. It's something that, you know, we've only been gone 6 weeks, but the way our season ended, as most people, you know, Creighton's was the same way, but yeah. the way our season ended, you know, you have such a good year, you have absolutely nothing to show for it. I don't even know if we got a t-shirt. Maybe we did get a t-shirt for winning the I don't know, but there's just not much to show for it or actually tell those guys how much you appreciate them for all the sacrifices and effort they put in.
Couple more things I'll let you run, Coach. I know you said you don't miss, you know, maybe the process of recruiting, but I want to talk philosophy for a second, because I remember you saying this, and I've always wanted to have you elaborate on it. You said when you're recruiting a kid, you want to see that kid play great, you want to see him play okay, and then you do want to see a game where they play bad throughout the whole process. Can you elaborate on that? Like, what are you specifically looking for in those three instances?
Well, you know, I think there's three things you have to have to be that I look at in recruiting. And it doesn't mean it's obviously there's off the court things, there's character, there's IQ, there's a lot of things, but just from a physical standpoint, what I look for is explosiveness, quick twitch, can shoot. And I didn't say score, I said shoot. Mm-hmm. And then is he tough? And sometimes the toughness deal is hard to figure out. But to me, if you get all three of those and you come, if you go to a place that works with you, you're going to be an all-league player. I honestly believe that. Very few people have all three. You're one of the very few that possessed all three of those. yeah. But when you watch a kid, don't you want to watch him when he plays great so you know what his ceiling is? And don't you want to watch him when he's just okay so you know who he is? And then don't you want to watch him when he's crap so you know what he'll do and how he'll face a little adversity and what he'll do to still help his team win?
Yeah.
And to me, those are – now, I'd rather see him play great, obviously.
Sure.
But to me, if I was locked in on somebody, locked in on you, and let's say I was a little iffy. Now, if you're recruiting Wiggins, it doesn't make any difference.
Sure.
You know? But if you're a little iffy, saying, oh, geez, does he fit? Does can he make us better? I'd want to see all three of those.
Yeah,
I really would, because you know as well as I do, when you go to college, it ain't about you anymore.
Right.
It's about us, at least with 14 of the 15 guys on the roster, at least in their mind. And you know, you got to see, okay, if it's not about you, how are you a teammate? What sacrifices are you willing to make? And to me, if a guy's having a crap game and I got somebody else that's having a great game and he's exhausted and we're not going to win the game unless he continues to play well, and you're so worried about yourself you can't guard the other team's best player and make him do it every possession, you're a crappy teammate.
Yeah.
And so I would want to know that. And so that means that would probably be a knock against you, at least the way that I see the game.
God, that's good. I it's pretty amazing, Coach. I think it's almost 17 years ago to the day was when I first met you. You know, you take the job at Kansas. I was committed to Roy, but I was a preferred walk-on, so there was nothing binding me to the program. And I remember I was so terrified that you weren't going to want me. I didn't know what you thought of walk-ons, all that stuff. But I remember going into your office being so damn impressed with you. And I'm so glad that you gave me the green light to come play for you, because it's been – the cool thing is that I've been able to get the best of both worlds. I felt like I could still be a part of the program, but I still was able to kind of go to Creighton and play. Like, you've just done such an amazing job, and I appreciate it so much of making me feel like I'm still a part of it, which is ultimately every kid what they really want. They just want to be a part of something big.
Well, you know, if I'm not mistaken, Jeff Smith was your high school coach.
Yep, correct.
And I knew Jeff from his days at Nebraska. And so, yeah, so he told me you were definitely a great fit. So that helped right there. But you were an easy one, Nick. And I do think you probably had more of an impact here in your 2 years not playing much as many have had in 4 years. And I bet you could say the same thing at Creighton, because the things from an intangible standpoint, you know, you can't win without talent. I mean, talent sure. trumps everything. I think talent trumps experience. I think talent trumps everything. But in order to win at the highest level, you got to have talent, but you can't win without intangibles. And certainly the things from a energy, you know, people can talk about leadership, and you were probably a great leader in your own way at Creighton. And you probably led a little bit with us here. You probably did far more than what I realized you did, because, you know, Keith Langford could be a delicate flower sometimes. So we got to make sure that Keith's head was right. I mean, but God, what a player he was.
Unbelievable.
But I mean, so you did more, and trust me, I always knew you did more than probably what I ever told you you did. But the one thing that was so evident is when you walk into a room, don't you just want to be around people that actually breathe life into it, or bring energy, or bring oxygen to it, as opposed to someone that doesn't? And to me, you know, you can't win it all with a team full of guys just because they're good guys and stuff like that. But you can't win it all unless you have guys like that.
Yeah.
And certainly you'd always be welcome here because of that.
Well, I appreciate that. Clearly you saw my little basketball thought of the day I put on Twitter. Did I get the ice cream sundae analogy right?
No, did I get it? That was almost embarrassing to me as a coach. And you said ice cream sundae and doggy poop. Seriously, every player that's ever played for me is like, what? So because you know every team gets the exact same story. So that didn't give me much street cred at all.
No,
I'm a little disappointed in that. Hey, and one other thing that you haven't brought up. Not mean to do your job, but the Jayhawks and the Blue Jays, I guess, are going to hook up next year too.
Yeah, how do we? I mean, that's going to be a pretty good one, because you know, Creighton's got a couple of guards.
They're good, coach. They're good. Mitchell Bollett coming home,
he just
grew up right down the road, and then Mac hadn't been back for a while, but that'll be fun. I'm glad it's in Lawrence, not that it guarantees anything, rather than playing up in Omaha, because I know it's pretty rabid up there.
But you've had a ton of success in that building in Omaha. Punch your ticket to the Final Four.
If we had the tournament, we were going to be in Omaha.
Yes.
And I love it up there. I think maybe it all started from I don't know enough about it, from the College World Series, as far as the tourism industry. I don't know what started, but it just seems like to me it's just such a good fit, and Omaha is equipped to handle events like that.
Very much so.
Yeah, so it's very good.
Well, I'm already going to start campaigning with whoever is broadcasting the game that I'm a part of it in some way, shape, or form. In some way, shape, or form, I got to be a part of the broadcast of Creighton, Kansas.
Okay. Well, you know, hey, all I know is it ESPN or Fox game?
I'm not sure. That's the big question. My guess is they're going to bring in some guy named Jay Billis or some guy named Bill Raftery, and I'm going to be.
what do they have on you?
They got nothing on me. They don't know the ice cream sundae analogy. They don't know that. I mean, come on.
No. They've got nothing on you. They haven't laid out to 2 o'clock every morning on 7 consecutive days at Ava Jakes. They don't have anything on that.
I was heartbroken. You might have been. When I heard Ava Jakes was closed, I was like, I almost needed to go home for a little bit and gather myself emotionally. That was a lot of good times for Nick Baugh at Ava Jakes, Coach.
Okay? Yeah, I think you weren't the only one.
I think you're right. Hey, Coach, this was 30 minutes, man. I appreciate it so much. You know, I'm a big fan. Stay in touch, and We'll talk soon.
Okay. Take care.
A Parkville Media production.